It's 9 a.m. and you're listening to 88.5 WHBK-FM Chicago, the pride of the South Side. Talk Chicago is now on the air. This is John Zagluel. I'll be your host for the next hour, and today we have an action-packed show planned for you. We're going to take an in-depth look at the Bears game on Sunday. They've clinched the division. How miraculous is that? The first time they'll be in the playoffs since 2010. We'll celebrate, also talk about the five Pro Bowlers that all made and were selected and voted into the Pro Bowl this past week. We'll also take a look at the Chicago Bulls and Jabari Parker. He's now on the trade block, and I'm going to tell you why I was right from the beginning, back when the Bulls ended up signing him in July. We've also got Cubs and White Sox news, the transaction front, the Sox and Cubs both making some signings on free agency, and finally, near the end of the hour, a Christmas-themed Naughty and Nice list, talking about people here in the Chicago area, people in sports. Did they make the naughty or nice list? We'll talk about that also near the end of the hour. Before we get started today, let's take care of a bit of housekeeping. You're listening to 88.5 WHBK-FM Chicago. Now, you can reach me personally on Twitter at John Z Sports, Instagram at John Zags, and Facebook at John Zagluel, or you can visit my site, sportstalkchicago.com. All the podcasts, articles, more content is on there. All music you hear today is produced and performed by TMMRW, and he's on all music platforms, including Spotify and iTunes. Now, if you want to contribute to today's conversations, and believe you me, there's going to be a lot to talk about, you can give me a call, 773-702-8424. Again, that's 773-702-8424. And today, we'll be starting off with the Bears, and I'll be starting off with a question for you. What was life like in 2010, the last time the Bears actually made the playoffs? Let's take a look at some numbers. A gallon of gas was $2.96. It's actually cheaper now. The average home cost was around $250,000. And oh yeah, the Bears, they made the playoffs carried by the arm of Jay Cutler. That's right. Jay Cutler, in his second season in Chicago, threw 23 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, finishing with an average passer rating of 86.3. Back then, it was average in this year's league specifically. That'd be near the bottom of the barrel. Matt Forte was the feature running back. He rushed for over 1,000 yards. He caught 51 passes, had 547 receiving yards. He was an all-purpose back similar to Tariq Cohen, except a bit more talented in regards to rushing. And the third down back, you'll never guess it, Chester Taylor. Played on the Vikings for a while. That year in the offseason, the Bears made a plethora of moves. They signed Taylor. They signed the fullback slash tight end, Brandon Manamalayuna, as well. Different times back in 2010. Now, defensively, the Bears still had Urlacher. They had Briggs, Tillman, and Peppers to lead the way. And the team made it all the way to the NFC Championship game before losing to the Green Bay Packers. That's right, those pesky Packers. They've come between the Bears and the playoffs multiple times in this decade. I mean, let's not forget about 2013 either, when the Bears and Packers faced off in the final game of the season. The winner would go on to win the NFC North. It was a winner-go-home game. The Bears had won, they'd win the North, they'd go to the playoffs, and if they lost, they'd go home. The Bears played a hard-fought game. They were in it the entire time. They were winning. They were losing each time by one possession or less. Wasn't that much of a deficit or lead. And in the end, the Packers walked away with another win. They eliminated the Bears from a chance at going to the playoffs. And in fact, if you want to take a deeper look into the numbers, since 2010, so over these past 8 years in this decade, the Packers have gone 15-4 against the Bears. 15-4. That's seen the Bears go through three different coaches. Each coach, as they've come in, have promised, we're going to beat the Packers. I remember when Lovie Smith became the coach back in 05, that was the rallying cry. I'm here so we can beat the Packers. That was one of his main points. And although he did, and the Bears found some success early in the 2000s and late 2000s, the 2010s haven't been so kind. The Packers have a winning percentage of .800 against the Bears since 2010. They've won 15 of 19. But guess what? On Sunday, the Bears had had enough. The Bears were ready to flip the script. The Bears knew it was time to punch their playoff ticket. And they did it in the sweetest of ways by beating their longtime arch rivals, their longtime nemesis, the Green Bay Packers. That's right. Now the Bears had clinched a playoff spot, while at the same time eliminating the Packers from playoff contention. I mean, that couldn't have gone any better if you're a Bears fan. You not only clinch a playoff spot for the first time in 8 years, but at the same time, you eliminate those pesky Packers, the people who have been standing in your way these past 8 years and beyond that, for instance. I got a couple of major takeaways from this game. Number one, Mitchell Trubisky, and I know I've been critical of him in the past. I'm worried about what he's going to do come playoff time. There's no doubt about it. He's only a second-year quarterback in this league. But in my mind, on Sunday against the Packers, Mitchell Trubisky got the most important win of the season and actually played pretty well. And I know many people are going to contend this, that Trubisky's best game of the year was against the Buccaneers with the 6 touchdowns and no picks, or even against the Detroit Lions a few weeks back. 3 touchdowns, no picks, 355 yards. Here's the thing, though. Now, in those two games, he faced two of the worst defenses in the NFL. And just as important, those games were not necessarily must-wins. I mean, I didn't circle those games on the schedule or on the calendar and say, man, he really needs to pull through and win one of those games. That thought never crossed my mind. Against the Packers, however, there was a different feel. There was a different sense. The Bears needed to win to clinch a playoff spot. Had the Packers won that game, they'd be in the NFC wildcard race. There were implications for both teams in that game. Not to mention the fact that it's a historic rivalry. Packers and Bears, I mean, my goodness, that rivalry goes back to the 1930s. So that game against the Packers was without a doubt a must-win game. Unlike the Bucks or the Lions games. And Trubisky, in that must-win game against the Packers on Sunday, he came to play. How about this? 2 touchdowns, no picks, 20 of 28 passing for 235 yards. That right there is a solid game statistically. Without a doubt. But coupling those stats with the circumstances, with the implications, knowing you're facing the Packers, knowing if you beat them, you eliminate them, and at the same time, clinch your own playoff spot. And I will argue that this was the best game of the year for Trubisky, without a doubt. Trubisky played at his best. Maybe not statistically, but then again, when you're facing the 32nd ranked offense in the NFL, I would expect you to throw for 6 touchdowns and no picks. I would expect you to have an 80% completion percentage and throw for nearly 400 yards. But when you're facing the Packers in a game with multiple implications, in a game that could decide your playoff fate, in a game that can make history for your franchise, Mitchell Trubisky put on a show. Mitchell Trubisky stepped up to the plate and delivered. And I'll tell you what, maybe it was a fluke, maybe it wasn't, you know, there's still time to see, but I will say this, if he can perform like that in a big game like that, the Bears are extremely solid and they're extremely ready come playoff time, knowing that Trubisky can play the way he did on Sunday. Now, besides Trubisky's successes, there was a bigger story. Trubisky kind of got lost there in the dust because the bigger story, in my mind, was the defense, and for good reason. The Bears kept Aaron Rodgers, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, uneasy throughout the entire game. There was not a time where I saw Rodgers look confident, look cool, look like he was ready to carve up the Bears' defense. Not a time at all. Rodgers had a 59.5 completion percentage. He threw his first interception since week four. He's got two interceptions on the year, one of them now against the Bears on Sunday, and posted his lowest single-game passer rating of the season. Aaron Rodgers stunk it up against the Bears. The Bears kept him uneasy the whole game. Roquan Smith, Khalil Mack, Leonard Floyd all carried the defense. Eddie Jackson recorded another interception. I mean, my goodness, what a game it was for that Bears defense. And let me shift to this. Staying with the Bears, I mentioned Eddie Jackson, Khalil Mack. Both of those guys and three other Bears players now have made the Pro Bowl. They've been selected to the team. It's Mack, Akeem Hicks, Kyle Fuller, Jackson, and Tariq Cohen have all made the Pro Bowl. This is the first time since 2016 that a Bears player in general has made a Pro Bowl. That was when Jordan Howard made it on his rookie year, finished second in the league that year in rushing. And now this year, the Bears have five guys to boast. I want to talk about the five selectees for a moment. I want to explain to you why they've all made it. I mean, if you've been watching the Bears all year, it's pretty self-explanatory. But for those who haven't, for those who are wondering, here's a bit of a takeaway for each guy. Now, let's start with Khalil Mack. Mack has recorded 12.5 sacks already in 12 games. He leads the NFL with 6 forced fumbles. I mean, are you really going to question this? Mack has made an immense impact on this Bears team. His presence, despite his large contract, his presence has helped this Bears defense morph into what it is today. And there's no doubt in my mind that he should be on this Pro Bowl team and should be starting as well. Next, we've got Akeem Hicks. And this is an interesting case because last year, Hicks was snubbed. He had 8.5 sacks last year. He's a good player, 54 tackles in 2017. And this year, he made it. Luckily enough, recording 6 sacks, 51 tackles through 14 games. He's 11 tackles away from setting a new career high. It's a bit of a stretch considering there are only 2 games left, but it's very possible to see Hicks set that career high. And at the same time, 6.5 sacks, he has a chance to get up to 8 again, or 8.5, and really improve his stock. But again, Hicks was a snub last year. I said last year Hicks should have been the only player on that Bears team to make a Pro Bowl, and he didn't. Didn't even have any consideration around his name. And this year, he did. And the fans, the players, the owners, they all got this one right. Next up is Kyle Fuller. And Fuller had a great season last year, which, if you watched the Bears last year, you know Kyle Fuller had an amazing year. The problem was, though, is that it was his contract year. So no one knew if this was the true Kyle Fuller or if this was, quote-unquote, contract year Kyle Fuller. We didn't know if he'd come back this year with that same passion, knowing he was franchise-tagged and he got a bigger monetary gain in a per-year basis. No one knew what he was going to bring to the table this year. No one had a clue. But so far, I think he's exceeded everybody's expectations. He leads the NFL in interceptions with 7. He leads the NFL in passes defended with 22. So call it what you want, but statistically, that makes him the best corner in the NFL. Statistically speaking, Kyle Fuller, out of all people, is the best cornerback in the NFL, without a doubt. Try and argue me on that, because you can't. Statistically, he has the most interceptions, has the most passes defended. Fuller, with those numbers, was a lock to make the Pro Bowl, and I wouldn't be surprised if you'll hear his name later in the year when the All-Pro selections come out. I wouldn't be surprised if Fuller is named an All-Pro cornerback. He certainly deserves it based on his performance. Two more guys left, Eddie Jackson being one. And I feel bad for Eddie Jackson because You've got Khalil Mack, Roquan Smith, Akeem Hicks, Kyle Fuller. All of these guys are totally overshadowing the fact that Jackson's had an amazing season. He's right behind Fuller in interceptions with 6. He leads the NFL with 3 defensive touchdowns. He also was forced to fumble. He has 50 tackles as a safety. And Eddie Jackson having an amazing year, and it's going unnoticed because the Bears have so many big-name guys on defense. Jackson is truly shining in his second year in the NFL. And I'll tell you what, he's making me excited about this Bears defense in the future. He's only in year 2. Imagine when he gets to 5 or 6 and hits his prime. I can only imagine what Jackson and Fuller and all these other guys in this young core are capable of come next year, even 3 years down the road. This is the beginning of something special for this Bears defense. If you're in love with the team this year, expect it to get better. All 4 of these guys made the Pro Bowl. I expect even more next year, thinking about Roquan Smith getting some consideration, Prince Amukamara having another good year as a cornerback, but again, getting no consideration because he's just being overshadowed. The final Pro Bowler that the Bears have is Tariq Cohen. And I told you 3 weeks ago on this show, in my mind, Tariq Cohen is a top 10 running back in this game, without a doubt. And after this Pro Bowl selection, that only reinforces my comment. Cohen is in the midst of a career year. He's averaging 4.6 yards per carry, 406 total rushing yards, then 710 receiving yards. And he also leads the NFL in punt return yardage. All of those accolades help cement the fact that as an all-around running back, I'm not talking just rusher, because in a just rushing sense, yes, Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, all of those guys are near the top of the list. You wouldn't think about Tariq Cohen. But as an all-around running back, when you encompass his blocking skills, his pass-catching abilities, and his rushing attack, I'll tell you what, Tariq Cohen is a top 10 running back in this league. And now by making the Pro Bowl, that only justifies that comment. So after looking at these Bears Pro Bowlers, after watching them end the Packers season, well, extending their own on Sunday, I am extremely optimistic about the Bears' chances come playoff time. I mean, with this defense, one that I believe in, statistically speaking, is the best in the NFL, they have the ability to neutralize any team. We saw it with the Rams on Sunday Night Football. Rams coming in with this number one defense, Sean McVay, 32-year-old head coach, Jared Goff having a year, Todd Gurley, an MVP candidate, and the Bears shut him down, scored 6 points. I challenge Drew Brees to come here and carve up the Bears in regards to the playoffs. I challenge Drew Brees and the Saints to come here. Everyone's talking about the Saints being the number one seed. Well, look, he couldn't do it in 2006. And I'll tell you what, he sure as heck can't do it now. What about the Rams and Jared Goff? As I mentioned, they couldn't do it a couple of weeks ago. What makes you think if they had to come here and face the Bears, they'd do it again? If the Bears can defeat all of these Super Bowl contenders, then that itself makes them a Super Bowl contender. Heading into the final 2 weeks of the season, I'll tell you what, I'm excited to watch this Bears team take care of business, because come playoff time, and you heard it here first, I don't think there's a better team in the NFL than the Chicago Bears. I stand by that comment wholeheartedly. Call it what you want. I know it's a hot take, but I'll tell you what, the way they performed this year, now they've got 5 Pro Bowlers, they beat the Packers, they've beaten the Rams, they've beaten a lot of good teams. The Bears are, in my mind, the best team in the playoff hunt in the NFL. We've got a message here from the American Lung Association. We all know someone who should get a seasonal influenza shot each year. People with chronic medical conditions, anyone over 50, pregnant women, children 6 months through 18 years, and people who live with them or care for them. In fact, anyone wishing to reduce the risk of contracting influenza should get vaccinated. More details are at thefactsofinfluenza.org. So we just finished up talking about the Bears and their amazing win over the Packers, their Pro Bowlers, their playoff chances. If you have any thoughts on that, give me a call, 773-702-8424. Comment here on Facebook when I was talking about the Bears and the Packers. I think it's more so Aaron Rodgers that was the thorn in the Bears' side than the Packers as a whole. That's a fair assessment. That is a fair assessment. The Rodgers, since he's come to the Packers and become the starter succeeding Brett Favre, he's done well. And that 15-4 record that the Packers have exercised over the Bears since the 2010 year has been with Aaron Rodgers as a starting quarterback. So definitely it's a fair comment. But I think in the end, just because, you know, the Bears and the Packers, they're such a storied rivalry, that also plays into effect. And when you think about the Packers too, they've had good wide receivers over the years. They've had a couple of years in which they've had a good defense as well. So I do believe, yes, Aaron Rodgers has played a significant role, but let's not make it sound like he's this all-time great quarterback. Still Aaron Rodgers. He has a ways to go before he gets there. He has to win at least another Super Bowl. And I think that although it has been Aaron Rodgers to an extent, the Packers as a team have just wreaked havoc on this Bears team as well. So I want to shift to this now. After talking about the Bears, we'll get to the Bulls. As I teased before the show, talking about Jabari Parker and the fact that he's now on the trade block. Now, I want to start with this. Always remember this about life. Life in general, that is. It always feels great to be right. I mean, everyone, including myself, we hate to admit that we're wrong. We're humans. We're perfectionists. We want everything to be right. We don't want to have to swallow our pride and admit that we're wrong. Now, at the same time, when we're right and we can prove that we're right, it's one of the best feelings in the world. I mean, have you ever been losing an argument and pull out a stat or pull out some notes and all of a sudden the tables have turned? It's great. I love that feeling. That's why I love being on Sports Talk Radio. I love to prove people wrong and justify opinions. Well, today, I'm here to prove to all Jabari Parker fans that you were wrong and I was right. Going back to July, as the Bulls were awaiting another blunderous season in order to claim another high draft pick, they decided to make a small splash. They signed Jabari Parker a 2-year deal worth $40 million. What a great move, everyone said. He's making his homecoming. He's coming back to Chicago where it all started. And here's the best one that I heard Parker fans quip. Quote, the Bulls are kind of a playoff team now. The Bulls being a playoff team just by signing Jabari Parker is ridiculous. After the signing, I, unlike the fans of this glorified high school player, said that the deal was a huge mistake for the Bulls. I said Parker would not live up to his $20 million salary. And I said that his presence would do nothing to help the Bulls become some sort of playoff contender. Jabari Parker is an average player in the NBA, and even though he's a legendary high school and college player, you know, he played here in Chicago, in the NBA, he's nothing more than just an average player. Now, fast forward to today, and after the permanent hiring of Jim Boylan, it's been reported that Jabari Parker's on the trade block, and that the Bulls are actively seeking a team to not only take Parker, but absorb that ridiculous salary. Now, I know some have claimed that this trade is unwarranted, that it's just a move made by Boylan and management to flex their muscle, that it's not Parker's performance that's a problem, but the fact that he doesn't fit into Boylan's system. I'll tell you what, those are all great excuses. Man, you almost got me there. Let me tell you the true reason why Jabari Parker is going to be on the move sooner rather than later. Now, before I even get into his defensive numbers, and by the way, that's an entirely separate conversation that we'll get to here in a moment, because you don't even want to know what his defensive statistics are, both on a quantified level and on a regular, traditional level. Let's talk offense, which is supposed to be Parker's strong suit. Now, 2 years ago, Parker was averaging 20 points per game with the Bucks, and even helping shoulder the load that was carried by Giannis Antetokounmpo. 20 points, 6 boards, 3 assists per game, I'll take that any day of the week. That was Parker's breakout year. After that, he was supposed to be or morph into this superstar, but it didn't happen. Then he tore his ACL and sprained his foot and tore his other ACL. Do you see where I'm going here? Coming into the offseason, Parker's injuries had affected his performance. But the Bulls, instead of, you know, taking the easy way out and not even giving him the time of day, they decided to reward him for that, hoping that he would turn it on here in Chicago, be inspired by his homecoming. Well, this year has been nothing short of average for Jabari Parker. He's averaging 15 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists. I mean, that's okay. That's respectable. he'll be able to make a career out of something like that, a 15-7-2 game. But that's not worth $20 million per year. Not even close. On offense only, he's performing slightly above average. And that's only because, and I want to stress this, because he's grabbing some rebounds. Because Parker's a guy who averaged 20 points per game. Now he's averaging 15. In my book, that's an extreme underestimation. That's an extreme disappointment. But because he's getting those 7 rebounds, I'll give him the fact that he's slightly above average. He's making some contributions on the offensive end. But other than that, there's nothing there that justifies his salary in relation to his contributions to this team. Now let's take a look at the more fun aspect of Jabari Parker's game, defense. By the way, just on a side note, this was a guy who was quoted as saying, quote, they don't pay players to play defense. He said, quote, they're not paying me to play defense. Well, it seems like Jabari lives by that creed, considering that in a ranking system released in November, he was ranked as one of the worst defenders in the NBA. We're not talking just divisionally or in conference or even at his position. We're talking the entire league. Jabari Parker is one of the worst defenders in the National Basketball Association. But hold on a minute. What about his homecoming? What about the high school prodigy coming back to Chicago and revitalizing his career, doing some good home cooking? Guess what? You were wrong. I can't believe that people thought that the Jabari Parker signing was actually a good idea. Actually, the only way you can classify this as a good signing is the fact that Jabari has helped the Bulls lose games, tank, and get a good draft pick. If you want to spin it that way and make that argument to me, then fine. I have no problem with that. But if you're going to sit here and tell me that Jabari has contributed to this team, that he's playing up to his $20 million per year salary, I have to say you're dead wrong. Because if you want to base this on sheer performance, I find it ridiculous that the Bulls paid the worst defender in the NBA, a guy who's coming off 2 serious knee injuries and a foot injury, $40 million over 2 years. So Jabari Parker fans, in closing, you were wrong. Don't have to admit it to me. I know how hard it can be to do that. Again, we're humans. We're perfectionists. We hate to admit our mistakes. We hate to admit that we're wrong. But it's not hard for me, on the other hand, to show you that I was right. And Jabari Parker coming to the Bulls was a disaster in the making, and I'm so happy that it's coming to an end very soon. The question's going to be, though, what team is going to be willing to take on that salary? And to be honest, I don't know who. I don't know who in their right mind is going to ask specifically and want to take on that immense salary. But whoever does, God bless them, because they're helping out the Bulls in this situation. Jabari Parker's signing was unwarranted. Jabari Parker is not playing up to the money that he's being given. And I fully applaud the Bulls and their efforts for deciding to get rid of him right now. A message from the Pool Safety Foundation. It might be the door alarm or the new safety drain covers, the pool fencing, even the swim lessons. But the fact is, you can never know which safety step will save a life until it does. Adding multiple safety steps to your safe pool practices can mean the difference between a close call and a call to 911. Simple steps save lives. To learn some new ones, visit poolsafely.gov. Again, that's poolsafely.gov. So we just finished up talking about Jabari Parker and the Bulls. Earlier on in the show, we talked about the Bears and their big win against the Packers, plus their Pro Bowlers and the NFC playoff picture. If you have any thoughts or any contributions, give me a call, 773-702-8424. Again, that's 773-702-8424. Now, at this time, we're going to be playing my Sports Talk Chicago flashback. And today, being that the Bears just clinched the division, they've made the playoffs for the first time in 8 years, we'll be playing my interview with Tom Waddle. Hold on a minute, folks. It looks like we have a caller on the line. Been waiting a minute here, so let's get them on the air. Hold on 1 second. Hi there. You're on Sports Talk Chicago with John Zagluel.
Hello. Hi. This is Nathaniel. Your East Chicago friend, all the way calling, all the way from Virginia. I just wanted to ask you about like two comments you made. The first comment about how the Bears are the best team in football.
Yeah, what were your thoughts on that?
Hey, John, I just wanted to ask you about two comments that you made. One, about the comment that you made about how the Bears are the best team in football. I kind of disagree with that. I feel like the Chargers might be the best team in football.
I get where you're coming from there, and that's a fair assessment. I'd say Bears and Chargers are vying for that top spot, without a doubt. The Chargers, and the good thing about them, I'm happy you brought that up, they're such a deep roster. I mean, you've got Melvin Gordon and Eckler behind him. You've got an amazing receiving core, you know, Williams and Keenan Allen, Benjamin. And then you've got Phillip Rivers, who in my mind is already a Hall of Fame quarterback. He wins the Super Bowl this year. He cements his status. Their defense, too, Joey Bosa, very good player. So, yeah, I agree with that statement. It's the Bears and the Chargers fighting for it. Now, in my eyes, I think the Bears have a slight edge just because their defense is more stifling. But I do get where you're coming from on that. I know you had one more point. You could go ahead with that.
Yeah. And also, your comment about how Tariq Cohen is a top 10 all-around running back. First thing about that, I mean, he got in as a punt returner, and I get your point about how, like, you have to take that into account. But, like, even, like, off the top of my head, I can, like, I can come up with 10, 15 running backs that are better than Tariq Cohen, you know, like Saquon, Ezekiel, Kamara, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, I understand where you're coming from when you say that, but at the same time, like, when you say all-around running back, you have to include, you know, pass-catching abilities and rushing abilities, and I feel like, like, just the three or four that I just mentioned are better than Cohen in that aspect. So,
no, and I get where you're coming from on that. Now, I'm not saying Cohen, you know, is up there with Zeke, with Saquon Barkley. Those guys are legitimate top five running backs in the game. I'm saying Cohen's more so on the fringe, 9 or 10. And the reason I say that is because his rate stats are great. He's averaging 4.6 yards per carry. If he could get more carries, which, unfortunately, that's a problem with Jordan Howard being the bulk of the running game for the Bears, you know, it's going to be a problem for him. But the fact that he has 710 receiving yards, he's on pace to get probably around 800, 850. The fact that he could probably get to 500, 600 rushing yards, that's pretty impressive. And as far as scrimmage yard leaders go, if you want to take into account all of the scrimmage yards that a running back can compile, I guarantee you that Cohen, if he finishes with around 1,400, which is what it's going to be looking like, he'll finish top 10 in the league in regards to running backs and scrimmage yards. So I know it's tough to think about that, knowing that Cohen has limited carries, and I understand that completely. But as far as all-around running back in regards to scrimmage yards, pass-catching ability, I feel that Cohen still is a top 10. Maybe on the fringes, 10, you know, you can make the argument 11, 12. But I think he's still there, in my eyes.
Yeah, I get that. It's kind of like the same argument like last year with Tyreek Hill making the Pro Bowl as a returner. I mean, he was a top 10 wide receiver, but he just did, I mean, he didn't make it as a returner. So I can kind of get like where you're coming from on that too.
Yeah, of course, Tyreek Hill, another great example. A guy who started in this league as a dynamic punt returner and kick returner, then all of a sudden, under Andy Reid and his offensive scheme, he turned into this great receiver. Now he's getting 1,000 yards a year. Now, granted, maybe in another team with another system, it'd be completely different. Maybe he'd be getting 700, 800 yards. But Hill himself is now morphed into one of the better receivers in the game. That's a great comparison, too. Hill starting as a returner, becoming a good receiver, and now Cohen starting more so as a returner and kind of a flashy, you know, very quick player with limited time, morphing into one of the better running backs in the game. But thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate it. Very interesting viewpoints there. I love listener interaction. So we're only halfway through the show. So again, if you have any other thoughts, you can feel free to give me a call. 773-702-8424. Again, that's 773-702-8424. So at this time now, we're going to be playing the announcer's call, or I'm sorry, not the announcer's call today, that's coming up. The Sports Talk Chicago Flashback, which is what I was about to get into before that phone call. So today, with the Bears doing well, I wanted to play my interview with Tom Waddle, former Bears wide receiver and now a host on ESPN 1000 here in Chicago. In the interview, we reflect on his amazing NFL career and how he overcame going undrafted to becoming the Bears' number one wide receiver. And near the end of the interview, we'll also recap a funny moment that he was a part of on First Take on ESPN, where he really told off Stephen A. Smith. and now he lives to tell that tale. So here's my interview with Tom Waddle. After that, we'll get to the announcer's call of the day, Cubs and White Sox moves, plus my naughty and nice list coming up in just a moment. Here's the interview with Tom Waddle. You're listening to 88.5 WHBK-FM,
Chicago. Or ask your operator for assistance. This is a...
Chicago. And Tom, I wanted to shift gears to your playing career, starting at Boston College. Now, you're a record holder for most receptions in a season and in an individual game, and you were also a first-team All-East selection. With all of these accomplishments that you've had, what was it like for you to not get drafted in 1989?
Well, it wasn't a surprise because, I did have a nice career at BC, statistically. But I went to the Indianapolis Combine after my senior season, and I ran a 4.79 and a 4.81 40-yard dash at 179 pounds, I think. I was a little sick before I went to the Combine. So I knew that based on my lack of pure athletic ability, that it was a very long shot to be drafted. And back then it was 12 rounds, so it was even easier to be drafted back in the day. But look, I never was hung up on being drafted in any particular spot. I just wanted to find a way into an NFL camp, and like I had at every level before, prove to people that I had the ability, the desire, and what it took to make the team and contribute. So it wasn't a shock on the draft weekend, but it all worked out for the best.
When the Bears ended up signing you, you know, you didn't play that much for your first 2 years. Then came the Monday night game against the Jets. Take me through what happened that night and how much that game meant to your career.
Well, the first couple of years, I actually was on the practice squad more than I was on the active roster. I think I spent 4 weeks on the active roster my rookie year and comparable amount of time, maybe a little bit less, my second year. My third year, actually, my career started to turn in the right direction after being cut in training camp again for the third consecutive year. We had some injuries. I actually played the opening game of the season against the Vikings in 91 and had a good game and made an important touchdown catch and early in the game at the end of the first half. And we ended up winning the game 10-6, so it was a really meaningful catch. From that point forward, you know, some opportunities came my way, and I found myself starting pretty soon. And that Monday nighter against the Jets was a very special, you know, night. I was on national stage, Monday Night Football, and, you know, found a way to have a good game. Thanks to my quarterback and the rest of my teammates, it was a good night, and we ended up winning the game as well. So, really memorable moment in my career in the league.
Later in that 1991 season, you got to play in the NFC wildcard game against the Cowboys, where you totaled 104 yards and a touchdown. How difficult was it for you to overcome that close loss?
Well, it was really tough. I mean, but, you know, look, I had suffered at least one concussion in that game. I don't really remember the fourth quarter. So not only did we lose the game, I also ended up, I believe I spent the night in Lake Forest Hospital being observed for concussion issues. So it was kind of a double whammy, so to speak, both losing and having to deal with an injury. Fortunately, things turned out okay, but yeah, it was a difficult loss. It was a game we lost 17-13. I think that we had our opportunity, but unfortunately, we weren't able to get past the Cowboys, and that was kind of the start of their dynastic run.
You know, you mentioned a mild concussion. I found online, too, that it said you had a bruised sternum as well. How were you able to overcome both of those injuries and still play for most of the game and do well, too?
Yeah, you know, that was back in the, you know, with 91, it was back in the day where, you just ran out there, and we didn't know a ton about, you know, concussions and brain trauma. And I mean, I would never hold the Bears medical staff or any of the coaches, you know, accountable for anything. It was just the way that the game was played back then. The truth was, I actually, it was listed as a bruised sternum, but I actually had something, I popped a blood vessel in my throat. I didn't even know that it was really listed as a bruised sternum. I started spitting up blood about halfway through the second quarter. So they took me inside to make sure that I wasn't experiencing some sort of catastrophic internal bleeding and realized it was just coming from my throat. I think I got hit in my throat or something happened while I was spitting up blood. They may have listed it as a bruised sternum, but it was really something. It looked worse than it was, I'll put it that way.
And on a final note, I wanted to ask you about your conversation with Stephen A. Smith on First Take back in 2017. I mean, I have to say, you really told him off. Describe the incident, and how did you feel after owning that conversation?
Well, you know, I mean, it's funny. A lot of people, first of all, Stephen is one of my favorite people in the business. People, you know, you describe Stephen, some do, as you love him or you hate him. I love him. He's very talented, a hard worker, and off the air, he's one of the nicest guys I've come in contact with in this industry. So just to kind of let everybody know, there was no lingering hard feelings. And my goal wasn't to try to create any type of controversy. He was just asking me a question about a much-debated situation here in Chicago with Jay Cutler and not being able to play in the NFC title game and the injury that he suffered. And, you know, the conversation went down that road, and I've always felt it's very difficult to point fingers at someone and try to know and understand how that person physically, how capable they are. I think it's a dangerous conversation. It's a slippery slope, and I kind of just made the point that, you know, people in Chicago trust me when I supported Jay Cutler on that front because I'd actually played the game, and they realized that. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a situation where I was trying to say, hey, Stephen, I've played and you haven't, so I'm right and you're wrong. It was me just basically saying, he asked me how my listeners in Chicago feel about me when I support Jay Cutler, and I just told him I think they trust me because I played the game. So I think there was more made of it than actually, there was no raw intentions to it.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for being here on the show. It was such a pleasure to have you on today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
My interview there with Tom Waddle here on Sports Talk Chicago. What a great guy. Some really funny stories, some good stories about his career, and then obviously that funny story near the end involving him and Stephen A. Smith. So again, remember, you can still give me a call. We've got Cubs, White Sox news, plus my naughty or nice list in due to Christmas here. So we'll be talking about that in just a moment. But before that, let's get to our signature segment, Announcer's Call of the Day, here on Sports Talk Chicago. We've been talking about the Bears a lot and how they clinched the NFC North this past weekend, sending them to the playoffs for the first time since 2010. And as the final seconds ticked off the clock, the Bears radio voice Jeff Joniak summed up all of the emotions that the Bears faithful, including myself, have endured over these past 8 years. So let's listen into Joniak on the call for WBBM 780 here in Chicago as the Bears end a years-long playoff drought against the Green Bay Packers.
Bears trying to get their 10th win. Here's the boot up in the air. Going up for it. Allen Robinson, he's got it! He's caught the ball at the 43-yard line. Flag is down. It's going to be on Green Bay. I think that'll be a fade-to-black moment with Allen Robinson taking it out of the air and plucking it away from any Packer within his vicinity. They huddle up. Listen to this crowd. Trubisky takes the snap, takes a knee. They head to the field. The Bears have won it 24-17 over the Green Bay Packers. And it's been an anguishing absence from the playoffs. 7 years, 11 months, 27 days. They go last to first, and they win the NFC North 2018 division champions for the first time since 2010. They're headed back to the playoffs, and these loyal fans have been rewarded for their loyalty, and they have a Bears team to be proud of right now. Fun, tight, exciting, stubborn, intense, and Matt Nagy swag has led this team from really humble beginnings. The unknown, the great unknown of the season, had no idea what this team was going to be. He didn't know what type of team this was going to be when he stood before them on April 3rd in the first team meeting. But your Bears are NFC North division champions, the 11th time they have won a division championship, the fourth in the NFC North, 2005, 2006, 2010, 2018. Champions of the NFC North, the playoffs are coming back.
Jeff Joniak there on the call. And again, nice way to sum up all of the emotions that these Bears fans and the Bears as a team have been feeling over these past 8 years. That was the last time the Bears made the playoffs. Great call as always. Joniak, a pro's pro, one of my favorite radio voices in the industry today. Really nice to have that call here for you on the show. So let's shift now to some baseball. Cubs and White Sox making some minor moves, but the White Sox I want to start with because they've made a move that, sure, on the surface looks minor, but could lead to a major one in the coming weeks. Now, the Sox made a trade with the Cleveland Indians. They acquired DH and first baseman Yonder Alonso in exchange for minor league outfielder Alex Call. Now, I'll get to Alonso's career, possible contributions, and all of that in a moment, but there's an interesting twist to this move. Now, Alonso, if you didn't know, he's the brother-in-law of Manny Machado. They're family, and guess what? They've never played together in the major leagues yet. Look, all I'm saying is that it'd be nice for Machado to have an instant connection with someone before even starting spring training, or even entering the locker room for that matter. Getting to play baseball with family, in my eyes, that's a special thing. Not many people get to say that, oh, I played Major League Baseball with my brother-in-law. Heck, I played Little League ball, I played travel ball, high school ball, and it was an honor and a privilege to play ball with my brother. I had a great time doing it. Imagine playing with family, playing with his brother-in-law. It's very interesting, and I know the Sox are supposedly in on Harper and or Machado, one or the other, possibly both, no one knows. But all I have to say is that that move signifies, it symbolizes more than just, oh, the Sox grabbed a DH first baseman. Now, Alonso as a player, I've always respected, and his career has actually been a story of constant improvement. He's gone step by step by step to get better and better as his years progressed in the league. I remember when he first debuted with the Reds, faced the Cubs a lot during his rookie year, and he was a consistent singles and doubles hitter, which I personally have no problem with. 39 doubles, 9 homers in his rookie year. I know the power numbers, sure, a little bit down, but I'll take 39 doubles anytime. And that hurt his perception around the league, though, because, of course, everyone values the long ball more than getting on base, getting hits. So no one valued Alonso as a decent player because he had 39 doubles but only 9 homers. And until 2016, Alonso had never hit 10 homers in a season. Instead, he had stuck to singles and doubles, rather, hit over .270, OPS plus of .106, just an above-average hitter. Nothing bad about him. Then in 2017, everything came together for Alonso. He credited his newfound success to A's hitting coach Darren Bush, and he discovered more pop in his bat. 2017, Alonso hit 28 home runs. He made the All-Star team, a .136 OPS plus. That made him an elite hitter. By that standard, Alonso became an elite hitter. And last year, Alonso built off of that career year, 23 homers, a career-high 83 RBIs. Look, Alonso, without a doubt, from a performance perspective, will bring the Sox 20 homers, 20 doubles, a batting average above .260, and for $8 million, that's not a bad acquisition. And remember this, Alonso can bring something else to the table, that being Manny Machado, plus his decent performance to the White Sox. Now, the Cubs, on the north side of town, have also made a minor move. They signed veteran Daniel Descalso to a 2-year, $5 million contract with a club option for the 2021 season. And it's odd because after this move, which is something that is not expensive, $5 million over 2 years, that is not a lengthy, expensive commitment, unlike, you know, what they've done to guys, you know, like, for example, Yu Darvish, Ben Zobrist, you can make the argument, Tyler Chatwood, Jason Hayward. This is not a long-term commitment. So, I don't understand why there's been a lot of criticism and backlash. I mean, Descalso is not the best player, and I'll give you that. I mean, the guy has a career batting average of .240, and according to OPS Plus, is a career 15% below average hitter. His offense, it's mediocre, it's terrible. There's nothing more to say about it. But his defense, it's respectable. He has a career .970 fielding percentage while playing the following positions. Not just one or two, the following. Second base, shortstop, third base, first base, left field, and right field. You get the point here? He's versatile. That's the main thing. And even though he has his offensive shortcomings, he'll fill some holes for the Cubs this year. Hey, Chris Bryant's out for a few games. He's nursing an injury. Now throw Descalso there. Javier Baez moves to second. Throw Descalso there. Addison Russell with his suspension. And now with new allegations, no one knows if he'll be with the Cubs ever again at this point. Throw Descalso there. His offense is mediocre. I understand that. He's a liability in the lineup. If he hits, he'll probably be hitting 8th or 9th, depending on where the Cubs hit the pitcher. Descalso will be right next to the pitcher in the lineup. But you know what? I'll take, for $2.5 million a year, a guy who can play 6 positions and play them well and fill in wherever you need someone to come in at. He could play left or right one night. Give Schwarber a rest. Give Elmora a rest. Hayward. This guy is a stopgap hole filler. That's exactly what Daniel Descalso is. And in my eyes, paying him $2.5 million to do that, that's invaluable. That's a great move by the Cubs considering what a guy like that could run you. Imagine if Descalso hit even 260 or 270, thereby inflating his war, making him a better player in other people's eyes. I mean, he could have commanded $8, $10 million per year. But for $2.5 million per year, a 2-year commitment that only entails a $5 million cost, for a guy who can play 5 positions and play them well, I'll take that any day of the week. So before you jump to conclusions and start lashing out at the Cubs for getting someone like Descalso, realize that this is a valuable signing. One that makes sense, one that can fill a need, and more importantly, one that did not cost the Cubs too much money. In fact, they got him at a discount. Hey guys, make sure to watch February 15th, Friday at 7:30 p.m. as Marquis Hill Black Cat performs here in Hyde Park. He's another winner of the Thelonious Monk Institute competition. He's a Chicago native and trumpeter, and he brings his newest project to a hometown stage. That's Friday, February 15th at 7:30 p.m. right here in Hyde Park. Make sure to check it out. So I promised you at the beginning of the show, before we ended, we've got about 8 minutes left in the program. Feel free to call in, by the way. 773-702-8424. Phone line's still open. But I promised you that before we finished up today, in the Christmas spirit, I'm going to play Santa Claus, and I'm going to give you a naughty or nice list of figures here in Chicago sports. I've got 3 on each list. I'm going to tell you about both the lists, tell you who's naughty and who's nice. You can agree, disagree with me. I don't care, but I'm going to give you it straight up. Let's start with the nice list. Start with the good news first. First on my nice list, Ryan Pace. I don't know what Pace is asking for this Christmas, but whatever it is, give it to him. He deserves it. This was a make-or-break year for Pace and his tenure as Bears GM, and he made it happen. He was being aggressive. He got Khalil Mack. He drafted Roquan Smith. He gave Trubisky weapons to work with, like Allen Robinson, Trey Burton. He hired the best head coach in the NFL in Matt Nagy. And he constructed this amazing Bears defensive front. Pace, in my eyes, has undoubtedly made Santa's nice list. Don't even question me on it, because you know it too. He turned this Bears team around. He decided to be aggressive and spend money, and it worked. And now he's looking like a genius. Next, and this is a rare one, but I'm going to give it to him, Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn of the Chicago White Sox. And I know the Sox aren't contenders just yet. They need another year or two before getting things going. But both Williams and Hahn are making the nice list because they've made the Chicago White Sox the most talked about team, not only in Chicago, but across the major leagues. Everyone is intrigued by the Sox and their pursuit of Harper and Machado. And they're also intrigued at the young prospects that this team has developed over the years. Now, whether things truly work out remains to be seen, but the Sox are now, and you can argue this with me, they're more popular than the Cubs. And the Cubs are coming off a 95-win season, and the Sox are making more headlines. Doing that is a gift itself, and Williams and Hahn have made that happen. They are also on the nice list. My last person on the nice list here in Chicago sports, Khalil Mack. And I know this seems like a mainstream pick, but let me describe to you my perspective. Now, the Bears paid Mack a record extension, $141 million, $90 million in guaranteed money, and that's not to mention multiple draft picks that the Bears gave up to Oakland to even acquire Mack. Mac could have easily taken the money up front and performed poorly, in which case the Bears' 2018 season, in my eyes, would have been an entire different story. But instead, Mac has put that thought out of his head. He's continued to play at an elite level, 12.5 sacks in 12 games, Pro Bowler. And it's frightening to think about what Mac could have done, which is slacked off, played horribly, and really hurt this Bears team. Instead, he's making the most of this opportunity, and he's helping guide the Bears to the playoffs for the first time in 8 years. So to recap my nice list, Khalil Mack, Ken Williams, and Rick Hahn, and Ryan Pace. Now it's time for the naughty list. Man, I had a good time constructing this one. We'll start with Stan Bowman, Hawks GM. Let me get this straight. Stan Bowman, instead of blaming himself for the Blackhawks' struggles, decided to fire the best coach in franchise history to justify a 500 start. I mean, that entire logic is ridiculous. We all know that Bowman should have been fired, and probably will be, sooner rather than later. But to fire a Chicago coaching legend to save your own job is a low blow. Stan, you're getting a lump of coal this year, and the Blackhawks faithful is very disappointed in the move that you've made. Next up is Jim Boylan. Only been a part of the Chicago sports scene for 2 weeks, and he's already made the naughty list. Boylan has taken over a tough project, I understand, but his attitude towards his players has caused him to lose control of the locker room, while at the same time posting a 2-5 record through 7 games. Boylan has done nothing to improve this team, unless you're talking about improving their chances for a number one pick. In that case, of course, done great, just like Jabari Parker. If you want to talk about Parker improving this team's odds for a number one pick, then of course, I'm all ears. But when you talk about legitimate performance and talk about numbers, Boylan and Parker have not performed well, and Boylan especially now losing control of his own locker room? Not good for Boylan. He's on the naughty list this year. My final Chicago sports figure on the naughty list, Yu Darvish. Talk about a waste of money. The Cubs paid $126 million to get Darvish in order to bolster their rotation. The result, 8 starts, a 1-3 record, and an ERA just short of 5. Darvish has effectively ended the Cubs' chances at spending lots of money this offseason, and even in the offseasons to come, because of his massive contract that obviously hasn't worked out. I was skeptical of this deal to begin with, and now I regret ever supporting it. I really do. Because that was a horrible move. And no one could have seen it coming, of course, but now, in retrospect, looking at the timing, horrible move. Darvish has wasted the Cubs and their fans lots of time and money, therefore adding him to the naughty list as well. So, a quick recap. On my nice list, Ryan Pace, Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams, and Khalil Mack. And on my naughty list, Stan Bowman, Jim Boylan, and Yu Darvish. So there is my naughty and nice list of Chicago sports figures. Whether you agree with it or not, those are my takes, and I'm standing by them. Can't convince me either way. So 2 minutes left in the program, and that's going to do it for us today. I hope you enjoyed today's show. We got to cover lots of things, a very quick, fast-paced hour. Talked about the Bears, their amazing run. Now they're going to the playoffs. The Bulls and Jabari Parker, whether you want to admit you're wrong or not, I'm going to tell you I was right in Jabari Parker and that signing. Cubs and Sox making some minor moves, and of course, in the Christmas spirit, naughty or nice list here of Chicago sports. Again, I'm John Zaglul, host here on Sports Talk Chicago. You can find me on Twitter at John Z Sports, Instagram at John Zags, and Facebook and LinkedIn at John Zaglul. Make sure to tune in to SportsTalkChicago.com, too, for articles, podcasts, and more special interviews. Posted a podcast yesterday with Chuck Garfine, White Sox lead reporter for NBC Sports Chicago. Great conversation about the Sox and their ideas, their moves coming up in regards to Harper and Machado. And remember to tune in next Thursday, not next Thursday, the one after for the show. And after that, we'll go back to Monday mornings at 9 a.m., I'd like to thank the University of Chicago, WHPK, and show contributor Tom Waddle for today's show. And we'll sign off with music by TMMRW. So long, everyone.
As if you don't know, this is